Hello and welcome to the BS History Podcast. My name is BS Dreyer, and whether or not those initials are fitting, I'll let you judge. Now today I wanted to talk a little bit about some new interesting research into the fall of the Ming Dynasty, a dynasty that ruled over China around 400 years ago though. This powerful imperial dynasty toppled. And some new research suggests that it might have been interference from nature, Mother Earth herself, that was responsible at least partly for the quite sudden and quite tumultuous demise of the Ming Dynasty. Now, first off, a little bit of background about the Ming Dynasty, or more broadly, China around 400 years ago. As many of you might know, around 400 years ago, China was without a doubt the strongest, most powerful, most rich nation on the face of the planet. In fact, it had been that way for about 2,000 years. That facet of Chinese history, incidentally, explains to some extent why China kind of acts the way that it does in modern day times as well, because China still has this idea that the kind of influence that Europe and the West has had on global politics for the past at least 200 years, arguably 300 years, are kind of a fluke in history. Because for such a long time, China was the undisputed champion on really any and all levels of human endeavors. They were the most inventive, they were the richest, they were the largest nation in terms of people, at least to this day. They still are now challenged a little bit by India, but you know, that's a thing for another time. But at any rate, at the precipice of the Ming Dynasty, arguably China reached its kind of zenith. It was by far the strongest nation at a time when Europe was only just getting into the age of exploration, kind of building itself up after the medieval period. The Ming Dynasty around 1600 seemed invincible. Ming China had the world's biggest economy, and it was serviced by a comparatively really well-functioning bureaucracy, which was capable of reaching out into any and all corners of society. Culture was flourishing, and the Ming emperors had even almost kind of established an overseas empire and had been responsible for sending large fleets all the way to the East African coast. Of course, that whole endeavor was eventually stopped, but had it continued earlier under the Ming Dynasty with the Admiral Sheng He, if I don't misremember his name, well, things would have looked very different indeed in global politics today and in world history in general. But of course they didn't. And for a while, many historians seem to tend to believe that, you know, Europe's kind of eventual ascent to the top of the geopolitical cake, let's say, or to a top position in geopolitics and in world history was kind of destiny, that it was down to, you know, God, if you're, you know, a believer, or down to just good old perseverance. But of course, now historians are casting a lot of doubt on those theories. For a while, it was theorized that Ming Dynasty, its economy so heavily tied into silver, was becoming a victim of new silver that was found in the New World, which was, of course, a monopoly of different European kingdoms. And so European kingdoms were made incredibly wealthy through trade with China that needed silver for its own economy, and therefore let Europe buy its prized goods such as silk and spices and other things that the Chinese had access to in different markets, and thereby propping up the Europeans to the extent where the Europeans were able to overtake the Chinese in fields such as science and innovation, and eventually indeed subdue China almost completely around 100 years ago with the fall of the last Chinese emperor. But there is some new research that suggests that that might not be the whole story, or even that big a part of the story behind the fall of the Ming Dynasty. Of course, a huge part was the Manchurian army. Well, really it was a horseback army, so I suppose a cavalry, that rode on into China and conquered Beijing and established a new dynasty. And this happened to the Ming Dynasty only a few generations after 1600. 1600, when, of course, as I mentioned, Ming Dynasty was, by all intents and purposes, by far the strongest nation, the strongest empire. And of course, an invading army from Manchuria was not the only part of this whole thing. It's not the only explanation. There was a series of farming kind of revolts that happened, a pretty oppressive system, let's be real. It was in Imperial China at the time, so you can kind of sympathize, I know I certainly do, sympathize with the farming communities that have revolted throughout history indeed, and not just in China, of course, but it was explicitly quite bad for them. Towards the end of the Ming Dynasty, the oppression was felt perhaps in a more serious way than it had been before, because of a long-lasting drought coupled with the ensuing kind of lack of harvests, or at least the harvest output. You know, some entire crops were completely decimated and others were far less than needed for the very large Chinese population. So those two factors, the Manchurian army invading and the various revolts throughout Ming Dynasty China, of course, eventually toppled the regime in a surprisingly short amount of time. But perhaps, and this is according to this new research, the overall most important factor in this whole event, this series of events that eventually toppled Ming Dynasty China, was a volcano erupting in the southern part of the Philippines, at the time a relatively new Spanish colony, 3 years before the Ming Dynasty collapsed. On the island of Mindanao in the Philippines, there is a volcano today named Mount Parker. And on the 4th of January, 1641, it erupted. To understand the power of the eruption, let's turn to a Spanish eyewitness that describes the scene in the hours directly after the eruption. Around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it was as if it had become the deepest night. And around 2 o'clock, it was so dark that we could not see our own hands. The darkness continued until 2 o'clock in the night, when a tiny bit of moonlight became visible, to great relief for both Spaniards and the natives, who had feared that they would be buried in the ash. So we can kind of tell that this was an intense moment for the people living in the immediate vicinity of the volcano, but the consequences also reached out further, quite far afield indeed, because around 50 million tons of sulfur dioxide had risen and got itself stuck, so to speak, in the stratosphere. And this meant, of course, that there was a global cooling, as often happens after very violent volcanic eruptions. This eruption resulted in a weaker monsoon season, which of course created problems for all of East Asia, Southeast Asia, but in China the consequences were catastrophic. Here was where the farmers in a series of provinces throughout Ming China were already suffering from a drought that had really been going on since 1637. So this might have been the nail in the proverbial coffin for the Ming Dynasty, this one eruption that kind of sent the whole production of food throughout the empire spiraling downwards and led to famine, hunger, disease, and as a result made the Ming China, the imperial forces, that much less capable of withstanding the eventual incursion that came from up north from Manchuria, where of course in short course the Manchurians were able to topple the Ming Dynasty Chinese and indeed create their own new dynasty. Of course the Manchurians were eventually assimilated into the ethnic Han Chinese population, so it wasn't like they were completely taken over and their culture completely changed, but nonetheless it was a devastating blow to China at a time when Europe was on the rise, and as a result of the fall of the Ming Chinese, there was room to grow for the different new European empires. Of course, the immediate effects of this Manchurian change in dynasty when the Ming became the Qing dynasty and the Manchurians came to power, as a result, didn't really ruffle that many feathers in China, because the Manchurians kind of took on the customs of China and relatively ruled in the same style as previous Chinese emperors. However, this catastrophe, this change of regime, resulted in eventually a more conservative and less adjustable kind of way of rule and way of life within China, which allowed the European powers to kind of utilize those weaknesses in the Chinese system, most notably, of course, with the Opium Wars that eventually happened during the 1800s. And that was only possible because of the fall of the Ming Chinese. Because when we look at that period of Chinese history from the 1600s until the 1800s, we will notice that in the beginning, the new Qing dynasty seemed relatively able to handle itself. It did show some perseverance in the face of different crises that it had to contend with, but that was during the 1700s, and towards the 1800s, the kind of conservative current that marked that particular dynasty of emperors came to play a role in the eventual demise of indeed imperial power within China itself, but also the relative demise of China itself as a leading global nation. This is anyways the rough kind of conclusion that was the culmination of interdisciplinary research conducted by experts in geography and history, and together those findings that both teams were making were put together and has been able to help us perhaps shape a little bit of a different nuanced picture of history. We as humans have a tendency to look particularly at humans and particularly at particular individuals that we know the names of for answers to any and all questions that, you know, we pose ourselves about our pasts. And I think this is a very good example of where, if we just step out of ourselves a little bit and take a broader perspective, we can gain some new insights. In this case, it was nature, specifically a volcano, that might have been the main contributing factor, indeed, to the demise of the Ming Chinese Empire. Arguably, one of the most important events of global history ever. So it's no small thing to kind of be able to connect the dots on this one thing. But it is, of course, not at all the only example of nature kind of influencing and indeed shaping our history. And it's indeed not at all the only example of volcanoes specifically shaping history. Because the effect of a volcanic eruption can be not just regional, as was the case with Mount Parker erupting in 1641, but indeed possibly global. Some of the events of history that have kind of troubled and baffled historians for a very long time might have a root explanation in a volcanic eruption. And there are other instances like the eruption of Mount Parker that might help explain or at least suggest a different explanation or different parts to an explanation of a historical event. Another example is the 1258 famine that plagued England. Now, famines, of course, at the time weren't particularly uncommon, but the 1258 one was especially bad, and many fled to London, hoping to be rescued, but the food sources in the capital were not even close to covering the basic needs of its own citizens during a famine, let alone a ton of people coming in from the countryside hoping to be rescued. A contemporary source, the monk Matthew Paris, describes the scene and says that the dead were laying everywhere and in groups of 5 to 6 in pig pens, in manure, and in the muddy streets. So all in all, a pretty horrific scene and a pretty significant event for the English at the time. And it may have its cause in a volcanic eruption in 1257, so the year prior, Mount Samalas in the Indonesian archipelago. In 1815, several centuries later, also in Indonesia, the volcano Mount Tambora erupted. And this particular eruption resulted in hunger in places such as Germany and Ireland, and many hundreds of thousands of farmers were forced to flee their home countries because there was simply not enough food. And some of those migrated to the United States, and the United States kind of owes part of its population's genetic makeup and heritage to those events, because if those famines had not happened, those people wouldn't have had to leave, and perhaps the United States would have been a more predominantly Protestant and English nation in terms of where its inhabitants drew their heritage from. The Mount Tambora eruption is also theorized by some to be part of the explanation of the sort of social unrest that happened throughout Europe following the back end of the Napoleonic Wars. And that theory is more contested because it's not as readily provable as a famine is, as a consequence of dwindling temperatures due to a volcanic eruption. But it certainly has the potential to uncover some aspects of some of these periods in history. So it is a very, very fascinating field of study, and it is, of course, not only a phenomenon that we look back at and think, wow, that was crazy that volcanoes could, you know, disrupt lives so much, because we only have to look back to 2010 and the Icelandic volcano Eyjafjallajökull that many of you will remember halted and grounded planes across the globe for a very long time because of the massive ash, you know, cloud that it formed. And indeed, in Europe, the effects were quite long-lasting for plane travel, etc. Now, it wasn't an eruption that sort of produced massive famines or hunger, because it wasn't really that powerful in terms of how much ash it actually sent up into the stratosphere. But it certainly had some potential. And if you look back a little bit further at another famous eruption, the 1883 eruption of the Mount Krakatoa, that many will be familiar with that name, certainly also an Indonesian volcano, which disturbed shipping as far afield as South Africa. All in all, I think that we should at least be mindful that when we read historic accounts about historic events, such as the famine in London, for instance, and we hear what that did to people and what kind of reasons that contemporary sources kind of imagine or conjure up, there might be some other factors that explain part of why these things happened the way that they did. And I think both the fall of the Ming Dynasty and the 1258 famine in England kind of point to the fact that it's not only down to humans, down to bad policy or war or things instigated by human individuals that, you know, events change in history. And of course, it's not only violent events like volcanic eruptions that shape history. Indeed, just natural barriers and the way that geography is and the way in which we live our lives according to regional circumstances such as climate and other things, you know, what can you eat in Northern Europe versus what can you eat, you know, in Mexico. Those are different things. There are different types of produce readily available, etc. And that's, of course, differences that were more pronounced at different times in history than right now, when we can have planes and shipping containers send us all our favorite stuff from all around the world, which is indeed a massive privilege of living in our modern times. But it still affects our diets and what we can eat and what is cheap indeed for us to consume. So those are just some of the ways that nature shaped history and shapes our lives today. And I think it's helpful to be mindful of it, because we humans do tend to lose ourselves a little bit in ourselves, because, well, objectively, humans are incredibly fascinating, and human individuals who shape history are also incredibly fascinating. Their stories are incredibly fascinating, but it's also quite fascinating that an eruption by a volcano might have toppled one of the history's, well, greatest empires, really, Ming China. Anyway, that's all from me today. I hope, as always, that you think today's episode has had a little more history than BS. You can find me on Twitter @BSDreyer. And thank you so much for listening.